This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
We also learned this week some tragic news that Chuck Lewis has passed away, a longtime developer, a friend to many here in our community, and one of those friends for nearly 20 years joins me live in studio, Charlottesville author Amy Lemley, who has co-written two books with Chuck Lewis. You lost a really dear friend this weekend, and I just want to tell you how sorry I am, because I know you and Chuck were very, very close. He was close with so many people here and had a dramatic impact on this community, and really will go down in the history of Charlottesville. And we want to, for the folks who might be new to this town, we want to let them know who he was and why we celebrate his life. And we also want to open the phone lines at 977-1070. If anybody would like to share their memories of Chuck Lewis, you're welcome to join this conversation at any time. How did you meet him?
Chuck phoned Albemarle Magazine back in the summer of 1992. I was the editor-in-chief. I was 10 years old at the time. No, I'm just kidding. I was 27. And he said he was looking to write an autobiography. He had something he wanted to say, and could we recommend a writer? I took 24 hours to think about that, and I was at a point in my life where I was ready to move on and do some other things, and was looking at ways to do that. And I called him and very boldly said, and this was a boldness that Chuck appreciated it as a bold person himself, I said, if we could speak confidentially for a moment, there's no one I could recommend more highly than myself. And somehow he found that arrogance charming. And we worked out a deal. And at that time, he was at Kathy's Produce, which was actually the second incarnation of the produce company that he and his wife, Kathy, had founded. The original company was Lewis Produce. And so I met him there at the warehouse, and we began writing the book. And so I do. And his friends and family tell me, in some ways, I certainly know him in a different way from anyone else. And I know how he chose to talk about himself and the things that he believed were important to talk about and share with other people. And it was his desire to be known, not known as in famous, but just known as in to express and connect with another person, that had him write this first book, which contains both triumphs and really sad, you know, horrible losses. And then the second one, which nobody knows about pretty much except a handful of people and you, and now the radio audience.
And we're just releasing let them that. Know about yeah. that. The book, the first book that was the result of when he called you was All the Riches of Job, which came out in 1993.
Yes.
Before we talk about what's in the book, what was the message and his life, tell us about the process.
Sure.
You know, would you sit down or would he write and send you stuff? And how did it work? Because that really was how the friendship started.
Yes, it absolutely was. And Chuck was all his life a very humble person. One of the things he said to me along the way was, I don't really even want to own a shirt that I couldn't put on and wear into the warehouse this day, you know, the very day that I pick it up. He was very casual. His briefcase in those days was a tomato box that had his endless tablets that he would write, and he'd make these incomprehensible diagrams on as he talked, always with the diagrams and the lists, and that's how he kept it all going, but just this cardboard box under his arm, you know. And this is, we're talking about at that point, a $10 million company, and this was Chuck. So I went in to see him, and he had just a little desk in a room full of desks, and he sort of cleared everybody else out for us to sit down and work. And he wanted to tell me his story chronologically, which he did. And I know you're a writer also, Coy, and you know that chronologically is not the way one usually writes a memoir or tells a good story. Sometimes it can be fun, but it kind of goes against the grain to do that. Anyway, that's how I heard. So I did not know what was coming. I really didn't know Chuck when I started. I didn't know. I knew where Kathy's Produce was. I did not know anything. So that's how it began. And how we would work is he would sit and talk for 2-3 hours. I would take notes. I don't think I was even using a tape recorder back then. Sometimes I would for my journalistic, you know, endeavors, but not for this. And I would write and write and write. I'd go home and I'd take everything that he told me, and I'd take his voice, and I'd take what I knew he wanted to say, and basically come up with a way to give voice to his vision of this story he wanted to tell. So what I came back with was you know, you look at when you're telling a kind of novelistic nonfiction story, where did this story really begin? And Chuck grew up, I'll tell you a little bit about his background. His parents worked in the city of Charlottesville, and he lived out in the country with his grandparents, first in a sort of settlement, he called it, called Quarrelstown, outside of Keswick. And that's not there anymore. We actually drove down through the woods looking for it. And it's not there. Now, he knew that the house he had grown up in wasn't there because he and his grandfather and his cousin took it apart board by board and stacked it up and put it on a horse-drawn wagon and drove it to Gordonsville and rebuilt it, and that's where they live. Those were those times.
Yeah.
He grew up, they did not have indoor plumbing. You know, it was a close family, but really meager beginnings for this person. He saw his mother and father on weekends. He had an older sister, a number of years older, kind of already grown up when he knew her, at least in his little mind, the expression that he would use. In my little mind, she was, you know, a grown-up movie star, a woman, beautiful, beautiful woman, his sister. So in talking with him after one or I think perhaps even just after that first 3 hours when we sat down, what I realized is how deeply a connection with a female figure in his life mattered. His grandmother, but particularly his mother, certainly his sister, and then his wife, Kathy, whom he had lost by the time we met. It was about 3 years after his wife, Kathy, wife of 22 years, had at age 42 died quite unexpectedly of an asthma attack. So when we look at the title, All the Riches of Job, A True Story of Success and What Came After, what he was wrestling with and what he wanted to talk about and share and be known about was, you may think everything's going fine when you're, as he says, on that nice level lawn, but you really get shaken up when your world as you know it, you know, is utterly changed. And how do you make sense of, you know, wanting to live that life? If that's what happens in life, do you want to live that life? He believed there was a God. Then he finds out that God is capable of doing this. He doesn't want to believe in God anymore, sort of, but he still does. So he has to kind of make his peace with that. Became a kind of a spiritual quest for him. But anyway, just returning to where I saw the beginning of the story, that deep connection with the female figure and why the loss of his wife would mean so very much. Again, he told the story from sort of day one of his life, and I came back to him the next day with, sometimes I wished she wouldn't come. All week I'd look forward to it, sitting through school every day, doing chores with my cousin Veronica and my adopted brother Flanagan, spending time with our grandparents, listening to grandmother talk about God, or just hearing stories about their lives. I'd think about my mother and wish she were there. But then, like a bug in my ear, this half-thought, half-feeling would sneak into my head, confusing my six-year-old mind even more. I was always so glad when she came, but so sad to see her leave again. Every Saturday, she would arrive by bus to spend the night, offering up some little treat, just being the sweet, loving woman that she was. Then she'd climb back on the bus again Sunday and head away on the dusty Virginia road that led to Charlottesville, 20 miles and an hour or two of tears away from her little boy.
We're talking with Charlottesville author Amy Limley about the passing of Chuck Lewis. Amy co-wrote a book with him, All the Riches of Job. It came out in 1993. The new book that she recently wrote with him, The Far Country, Life After Kathy, will be available soon in local bookstores. We'll take a quick break. This is Charlottesville Right Now. It's 48 minutes after 4 o'clock here in Central Virginia, 12 before 5. This is Charlottesville Right Now, News Radio 1070 WINA. We're talking live with Charlottesville author Amy Limley. She was good friends with Chuck Lewis for nearly 20 years. Chuck passed away this week, lost a battle with cancer. Amy wrote All the Riches of Job with Chuck in 1993. And the new book, The Far Country, will be available very soon. We'll talk about that. Amy, tell us about this whole arc of success from these humble beginnings. I mean, how does this happen in the Jim Crow South, where this, you know, young African-American child grows up to be, you know, one of the rich guys in town and a developer and a friend to so many here? And what happened? How did he do that?
Well, the first person he would mention, if he were here to answer this question, is Scrooge McDuck. When he was a little kid, he decided Scrooge McDuck was who he wanted to be. He loved this notion of rooms full of money and cars full of money and just big piles of money you could roll around in. And he thought that seemed like a lot of fun. So he had this in the back of his mind from the time he was a young kid. And he always said he wasn't the favorite grandchild. So nobody was really like taking him under his or her wing or anything like that. He was kind of on his own. He was certainly close to his adopted brother, his Flanagan and his cousin. But he really kind of wanted to get out of there and live out in the world. So at 15, he lied about his age and joined the army and became a paratrooper. So this was not during wartime. This was, you know, during a time when we weren't at war. But he was a paratrooper, got out of the army, not even shaving yet, really. I mean, you know, and decided to move to New Jersey, where a cousin of his was living. And he found out that Howard Johnson was starting a program to specifically train black managers to better integrate their management. So he applied two or three times and they didn't take him. And then he went and got Dale Carnegie's book, you know, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And then he went back again. They're like, okay, cut it out. We'll give you a chance. So they gave him a chance. And within a few years, he was working as a manager of, he worked at a few different cafeterias for big companies. Nabisco is one. Also worked at a department store. And it was during that time that he met his wife, Kathy, who was, I think, on a break from college when they met. She was working as a clerk in the department store where he was working also. And they met and, you know, it just hit. You know, they just were going to be together really from then on. And together, they always had side businesses going. She came to share his dream of there's something we can do, this entrepreneurial spirit of let's see if this flies. Okay, not really. Let's see if this flies. Just, you know, looking for that thing, not trying to create the market, but just test it out, see what it's like. Pony ride business, laminating business. Trying to think what else. There were so many. Theater cleaning business. He said he would never, ever drop popcorn on the floor again after cleaning theaters. And let me think what else. Oh, Kathy was taking training to become a hypnotist because they thought maybe it would be a good business. So she would take the training and then she'd come home and tell him all about it so that, you know, they'd sort of get double their money for the hypnotist training that she, you know, the class that she was taking. So many different things. Well, by and by, one of his distributors at the cafeteria that he managed was a tomato distributor. And he said, Chuck, you know, you could really do pretty well at this. This is an easy business. You make a good profit. You know where things stand. Think about it. So Chuck did more than thought about it. He came down from New Jersey with his then, I think, 4 or 5 year old daughter, Leah, who's now Leah Traeger here. She's married to Joe Traeger of Traeger Brothers Coffee and you know, in the area here with so Leah comes down with Chuck and they stay in this very small rickety shack that had belonged to Chuck's father. And again, no plumbing, but hey, it's a place to stay. Got in the station wagon, drove to Richmond at 4 o'clock in the morning, got as many tomatoes as he could possibly fit in the car, came back and essentially went selling them door to door. This was in the early 70s to restaurants. It kind of seemed like something that might work. So he called Kathy and said, okay, I know we've got $250 left. Let's do this thing. So she came down and again, rent-free in a shack, you know, little tiny house, that is to say, that kind of rattled when you walk. I've been inside the house, so it's like, you know, this little thing. And so first it was just tomatoes. Then it was tomatoes, lettuce, and onions, which you can figure out are the staples for every restaurant. No warehouse. This is in the book, so I'm not really revealing any sort of trade secret here. No warehouse. They had their front porch and they just bought as much as they needed to sell for that day. Eventually, they did have their first warehouse, which was an old school bus that Chuck bought and parked and put a really heavy duty air conditioner in. So that's how it started. And
he's truly a self-made man.
No kidding. I mean, no kidding.
What an example for this community.
Yeah.
Now, he was an African American. His wife, who he lost tragically, was white. Did he ever have anything to say about the race issue?
We talked about it a lot. And the reason we talked about it was because there was nothing to talk about, which is paradoxical, I know. But what he always said is, you know, when I look in the mirror, I see Chuck. And I don't see black. I don't see white. I may see, wow, I look tired, or, huh, I've got a gray hair in my mustache. or something. But I don't see, you know, I don't look and say anything except there. I'm Chuck. There's Chuck. And it is remarkable. During the time that he and Kathy married, it was still illegal for a black man to marry a white woman here in Virginia. They were married in New Jersey. And yet they never, ever, he said, we never even got a dirty look. You know, the community, for whatever reason, it was fine. It wasn't an issue for anyone else. And it certainly wasn't an issue for the two of them. But it wasn't that they didn't ever feel they had something to fight against with that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
We're talking with Charlottesville author Amy Limley about the passing of Chuck Lewis, remembering his life, his contributions to Charlottesville. Did he ever get over Kathy's death? I mean, of course, in some degree, you don't ever, but.
Yeah. How do you. I think that writing the first book helped him to make a transition with that. He never stopped talking about her. She was always, I would say, really at the forefront of his mind, along with the other things one might have in the forefront of his or her mind. Sometimes he would say we instead of I. And I know when he was raising his kids were teenagers, basically, when they lost their mother. He would say, well, I would say this and your mommy would say this. And he would try to be both mother and father as best he could and balance that. What I noticed that he often would do is say we. And even we had a night a few weeks back when we said our very serious goodbyes and then happily had that awkward moment the next day. So, okay, good. I guess it was a false alarm. A most welcome false alarm.
But he carried her in his heart.
He did. He carried her in his heart. And when we were talking that night, and he was sure that was the night, and he said, well, we had fun. And I know he met he and Kathy. He would often revert to saying we. And it really was that she was a part of everything he would do. And, you know, he talked often about wishing to have another marriage. But I think, you know, for some of us, only one person is our heart. And no matter what other relationships we might go on to, you know, I know that if he's having it his way, he's with her right now, you know, and that's just was his fervent belief and hope.
Chuck Lewis died on Monday. He was one of Charlottesville's leading businessmen and developers, helped to bring success to a struggling downtown mall. His impact and legacy will be written in the history of this community. The book All the Riches of Job came out in 1993. The new book is The Far Country, Life After Kathy. And what we'll do is let's have you back on to talk about that and the message that he wanted to leave with people. We'll do that again. We are out of time, so we will take a break here for CBS News. Amy, thank you for coming in.
Pleasure.
And again, I'm so sorry.
I appreciate it.
You
thank
lost
you.
A very dear friend, and this community lost a great and humble man and a terrific example for all of our children.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.